If you're happy with the same old ways of dating,
if you enjoy sucking at communication,
and you have no desire to improve your romantic life, then our podcast might not be for you.
But if you want some out-of-the-box ideas to deepen your current relationships,
broaden your sexual horizons,
develop a better understanding of yourself,
or learn more about non-monogamy,
then you've come to the right place. I'm Jace.
I'm Emily.
And I'm Dedeker.
And this is the Multiamory Podcast. On this episode of the Multiamory Podcast, we're talking about how to make poly great again. Well, but seriously, we're basically straight up ranting about sexism, toxic masculinity as it's been shown in the current presidential campaigning in the US, and how the poly community can combat this shit. How we can actually try to make a difference and make things better instead of just ranting and complaining about it all the time.
I'm impressed that you actually said combat this shit. I didn't think that you would actually write out what I typed for you, but I'm glad you did. You know what? I'm glad you did. Because swearing is appropriate because I'm angry about this shit.
You're not even living here anymore.
I'm not even living in America and I'm still angry. Like, I don't know what it is. Why, like, this has brought up, like, much more vitriol for me than it has in any other election. I mean...
Yeah. Oh, yeah. This is definitely the most upsetting campaign season that I've ever experienced.
Well, it's unlike any other election ever in the history of the world ever. Well, at least in the history of America.
Yeah. I feel like
that's
pretty
fair. We don't know what Abraham Lincoln was saying on his, you know, hot mics back in
the day. You're right. Maybe he sounded like Trump had a close personal relationship with Abraham Lincoln, but yeah. My God.
You guys, like, I never wanted Multiamory to really focus that much on politics. Like, I hate talking about politics. It's never made me happy. I've never been someone who's enjoyed debating politics, but now it's just become something that's, like, so infected my brain sphere. Like, I just can't avoid it. And because it's just become such a huge freaking deal,
Just to be clear for everyone, this episode is not actually about politics. So for those of you who are like turning this off and just being like, I can't, my blood pressure is too high already, I can't do this. We're not going to talk the whole time about politics. Sorry, go on. I didn't mean to interrupt. I just wanted to keep the listeners listening.
That obviously current political events has set off an interesting cultural conversation about sexism, about masculinity, about sexual assault, about rape culture. Things that, of course, we were talking about before, should have been talking about before, but now it's just kind of coming even more into the public eye, you know, especially as we have somebody who's a public figure who says some pretty ballsy things and very non-consensually
sounding
things.
Who's running for the highest office in the land.
In the land. Yes, yes, indeed. And so, that's what kind of got us talking about these things, specifically in how they show up within the poly community. You know, poly communities tend to be, in my experience, you know, very sex-positive communities. You know, generally people who get engaged in alternative relationships tend to be pretty sex-positive. Of course, you can be in a non-monogamous relationship and still be very sex-negative. But, you know, generally people who have kind of embraced this idea that it is okay to have multiple sex partners, it kind of goes hand in hand with things like, you know, but we understand the ideas of consent and the ideas behind, you know, having safe and healthy sex and things like that. However, because of the fact that this is a community that does frequently get associated with sex itself, there are still issues. So there are still issues surrounding consent, even though these are communities that, in theory, would be populated with people who would understand it the best. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
Yeah, that it's, you know, in talking about this, it's hard because there are both these sort of small, subtle ways that sexism and sort of unsafe, non-consensual ways of thinking about physical touch and stuff like that are so pervasive in our culture and just sort of our normal way of being that those can kind of leak into the poly world And then also, it's something that even if you have a poly community where a large number of the people are aware of these things, that doesn't mean that everyone is. And sometimes people can go into, you know, especially women, can go into a polyamory event kind of with the expectation that the people they meet here are going to be on the same page as the people in their polycule or the people, you know, that they interact with about polyamory and kind of let their guard
super
down.
Respectful.
Right. Yeah. And that they might sort of let their guard down a little bit, and it can be even more shocking and more hurtful than when that, you know, when those sorts of, you know, sexist ways of being or sort of someone approaching them feeling entitled to be able to touch them or something comes up. It's kind of more, even more upsetting and hurtful even, because it's like, hey, I thought this was sort of my community of people that understood and where this was safe. And you know, and even as guys, sometimes it catches us by surprise if we see another guy do something like that too, that we don't even know how to react either and aren't being the best, you know, allies that we could be, or even the best educators to our fellow humans.
So this is something that all three of us have experienced either personally or witnessed firsthand in these spaces, you know, at poly meetups or mixers or discussion groups, you know, which should be safe spaces but end up not being safe spaces. You know, a couple of years ago, we went to a particular polyamory meetup, and, you know, a friend of ours was physically manhandled by multiple men, you know, and this was after an evening of you know, talking to her about being poly, an evening of talking to her about being a sub, and, like, we were all shocked by how much, like, consent was not asked for and just completely violated, and just, like, a bunch of people just, like, manhandled her, you know, when I was trying to leave. Like, a guy that I was in the pool with that I'd been talking to, like, physically tried to pull me back into the pool. And so it's just these, like, I don't know, these weird, like, very small, subtle things that kind of infect these spaces because it's part of our larger culture. I mean, what have your guys' experiences been with it?
This isn't so much having to do, and I don't know, Jace, if you have a specific thing in terms of, like, a meetup group, but I will say, like, in first dates, this is something that happened to me, especially, like, very much towards the beginning of my poly journey. But I went on a first date with a guy who was very explicit in his language to me about that, like, well, you must be down with fucking people, you know, whomever, because you're polyamorous. And then he went on to, after, like, I made it clear that I didn't want to see him again, he would text me every so often and say, like, well, I need a fuck buddy, and because you're polyamorous, you're clearly going to be down for that. And he went so far as to show me, like, on this date, pictures of women who he had slept with to kind of brag to me, like, this is what I can get, so, you know, you should be interested and thrilled in, like, having me as a sexual partner.
That is really messed up.
Yeah, and I and I remember, you know, hearing about this all from Emily when she back from that date. Because that's back when we were living together. But, like, this, that story, I've heard basically variations on that. That one's, like, especially extreme, and his texts were especially hilarious once we actually, you know, made fun of him and read them. But but, you know, in an upsetting, very much, like, violating sort of way. But what I'm saying is that this almost this exact same story I have heard from almost every single partner I've had since being poly. Some variation on this. Some variation on this kind of assumption that gets made about kind of this entitlement that a guy would have with a girl because she's poly. So, like, because she's not owned by one man, she must just be totally available to him. That he should be entitled to her because she's not owned by a man. And I say owned in the metaphorical sense, but, you know, might as well be. But that idea of... And I think, Dedeker, you've even talked about this on some of your travels, where you've had that debate of, like, do I just tell people I have a boyfriend so they leave me alone? Or do I try to, like, fight the good fight and, like, just say no as me? Or, like, at what point is that even worth it? you know?
Yeah,
women who,
I mean,
wear wedding rings, like going out to bars.
Exactly.
Totally.
Yeah. Exactly. Yeah. No, I mean, definitely, it's definitely changed country to country. You know, in some countries, I would try to kind of fight the good fight and be open about polyamory, even though I know that this is possibly opening me up to this guy thinking that I'm interested in him, which is tough. Here in Turkey, I definitely, like, if someone asks and I'm not interested in them, I just say I have a boyfriend. And, like, I don't even try. Because that's, you know, I mean, if you think that, like, the culture of sexual harassment is bad in the States, like, you ain't been to Turkey. Because it's, like, ridiculous over here. But, so, this is actually an interesting transition. Because I've experienced, and so many of our female friends have experienced something similar at poly meetups and at poly spaces... that it's made me not want to go to these meetups, like, you know, some particular meetups anymore.
I know a lot of people who don't go to certain meetups anymore because of this. Yeah.
And the thing is, because it's you know, forced me to choose between, like, well, I could be going to a meetup where, like, I could make some cool friends, I could be networking, I could be helping multi-amory kind of reach more people, but it's going to be at the cost of having to be really uncomfortable for the entire night, and so I'd rather not go. And this is indicative of a bigger cost that is a constant cost to women, you know, and specifically it's opportunity cost. It's this idea of, like, you know, either I kind of keep my mouth shut and I'm comfortable, for instance, with, like, an employer maybe flirting with me when I don't want him to, or saying something inappropriate to me when I don't want him to, but it's better for me to keep my mouth shut and, like, keep my job or get this opportunity that this person has for me versus saying something and losing that opportunity.
And And this is, I mean, we kind of got onto this subject from an article in the New York Times that's about that. That's they call it the special tax on women being that of, like, well, I might have this opportunity or I want to keep this job, but I have to put up with this certain amount of sexual harassment or a certain amount of not knowing if I might be sexually harassed. Like, you know, there's the example we were talking about earlier of, as a college student or a PhD student and a professor asks you to work with them one-on-one, there's sort of that, like, little bit of doubt of, like, is it really that they just want to work with me on this thing, or is there something else there I don't know? And it's kind of this extra amount of stress and worry that gets, you know, added on primarily for women. And I will say that in my experience, as a guy, like, I definitely have had some, you know, I've had some situations in my life that have been a very similar thing where it's sort of this, like, okay, like, I'm now clearly being put in an uncomfortable situation by a man. It is pretty much always perpetrated by men. Not to say that it can't ever be by women, but most, like, hugely most often by men.
Hugely most often.
Hugely most often. That's how English works. You know, a vast majority of the time by men. Where it's a similar sort of thing where I'm like, I'm not totally comfortable with how close they are to me in these situations or, like, the types of things they say to me, but is it worth me saying something about it or just sort of, like, dealing with it? And the amount of times that I've had to deal with this in my life is going to be much less than it is for women in their lives. But just, I mean, it does happen and it sucks. Emily. Yeah.
It still is, even, like, being in a position of power as well, it happens. Like, a lot. I mean, for example, I am a manager at one of the restaurants that I work at, and I still have male employees who are below me making lewd and obscene comments about me to my face, even though I technically could really hurt them within, you know, I could get them fired or I could write them up or something along those lines. But again, it is like, well, shit, I have to work with this person on a daily basis. Do I brush it off and take them aside and say, like, please never say that again? Or do I exercise my power and say, like, you little shit, I'm going to write you up now, you know?
Right.
So it's one of those things, and you do, it sucks that, like, it's even an issue and that that we as women or we as, like, anyone have to say to ourselves, like, is it worth it to even go this way? I don't know, to even go there. it's a tough thing to have to deal with and have to think about, because obviously the best thing would not to have to be to put ourselves in that situation.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, of course. I mean, I'm hoping, as sucky as it is having to be constantly bombarded with all the news of the election right now, like, I'm hoping, like, I think it's good that people are getting angry about this. And I would hope that that's an anger that carries over. You know, I mean, I was pleased to see that, you know, with the whole Brock Turner situation, that actually resulted in a law getting passed that... Yeah. At least in California, that made sure that people who have sexual assault crimes, like, do serve a minimum amount of prison time. Like, that actually resulted in something. As far as this, I don't know, because I don't know.
I mean, at least people are speaking about it, and articles are being written, and people are getting angry, and that's great.
And I think that it is a really important conversation to have, because one of the things that is really hard about this is the fact that it's so ingrained in our culture, and like, fuck, the fact that someone who's running for president in our country can say the sorts of things that he said and not even really apologize for it.
Oh, yeah.
Right? That the apology is like, I'm sorry if people were upset by it. Not that, like...
Yeah, but it's locker room talk. Like,
right,
boys will
kind
be
of
boys.
Making excuses and being like, well, that's just how the world is. And yeah, this is something...
Yourself.
Like, the thing that's really hard about this, though, and why I'm glad there is some conversation, and I hope we can help continue that, is that I know that for myself, as I was talking to Emily and Dedeker about this, but for myself, like, looking back on my life, there have definitely been times in my life, especially when I was younger, like in high school, where I have been essentially the bad guy in these situations. Like, there's obviously levels, the more extreme levels of, like, exercising power, like Donald Trump was doing to be able, like, to do whatever he wanted with women
power.
And that they basically were powerless to stop him without losing their jobs or whatever. But that, you know, like, just not with any of that in mind or any of that intention. It was just the way that you're kind of taught to interact as a guy with women. Like, looking back, I'm ashamed of some of the ways that I've talked to women or something like that. And I would say, on the grand scheme of things, I'm really not that bad. But I'm still very embarrassed by those things, and I wish I'd even known that. That was, like, not a thing that was ever taught to me or talked about. It was only something that I discovered kind of later on, either through thinking about things myself or, like, certain influential teachers, or eventually in college and, you know, learning about feminist theory and then being, you know, poly and getting this sort of community to talk about that more.
I will say that women also are... probably they do it as well to a certain degree, because we do it to one another and we say to each other, like, you know, that slut, that whore, whatever. And that's also not okay. It's not okay to, within the female community, be saying those things about and to each other, because it's not helping anything. It's not progressing anything in any way. So I think you're not alone, Jace. Like, we do it to one another as well, and that's not cool.
Well, I was going to point out the side that on the side of women, like, we frequently enable it, you know, like, you know, Jace has guilt thinking about times when he was younger and his behavior. Like, I think about my behavior as well, of times that I just didn't say something to someone who was doing something really inappropriate. And usually it was because it was in those situations where it's like, I'm at a modeling shoot and this photographer is making me really uncomfortable, but he's also about to pay me.
Right.
So, you know, and like, and I don't want to, like, make a big fuss, you know, and then have him never hire me again. And I wish that I could say, honestly, I wish I could say, like, yeah, that's how I acted when I was younger and I don't do that anymore. But, like, I still do it. You know, it was only a couple months ago that, you know, I was trying to negotiate a dance gig, actually an ongoing dance gig, and it was all going really well. And then the guy who owned the restaurant started flirting with me and started saying really inappropriate things. And I made the choice, you know what, actually, I'm going to very professionally say something. And I did. You know, I said, like, you know what, like, I would love to dance at your place. Seems like a nice place. You seem like a great guy. I would love if we could keep this professional. And that was all I said, and, like, never heard from the guy again.
Yeah.
Wow. You know, and so asshole. I'm like, well, shit. Like, so I had to make that choice of, like, losing that gig.
Good for you. Yeah.
Yes, but that at the same time, like, that's still in my head for the next time. You know, since then, there have been times with, you know, modeling gigs where someone has said something inappropriate, but I've been like, you know what? I'm just going to deal with it.
Yeah.
Because it's easier than potentially losing this job. So it's still such a pervasive thing that is difficult to get away from.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. For a long time now, we've been fans of AdamandEve.com for getting sex toys or lingerie or accessories, things like that. It's just a fantastic resource with a huge selection. And now, not only do we have a fantastic offer, but we also have a promo code that will work on AdamMail.com and EvesToys.com, which are their sites specifically for LGBTQ audiences. And our code is fantastic. It's 50% off of almost any item in the store and free discreet shipping when you use our code MULTI.
Yes, we love AdamandEve.com and have for years. They are our oldest and longest sponsor, and they just keep on giving great gifts to us and to our listeners. You can bring more pleasure and satisfaction into your bedroom by going to AdamandEve.com, AdamMail.com, or EvesToys.com and select any one item. It can be, you know, an adventurous new toy or anything you desire, something fun, something sexy, whatever sounds good.
So just enter offer code MULTI at checkout and you'll get 50% off almost any item plus free shipping. That's MULTI, M-U-L-T-I, at AdamandEve.com, AdamMail.com, or EvesToys.com. This is an exclusive offer that is specific to this podcast, and it's better than any offer that is currently available on their site. So again, use code MULTI to get you not just the 50% discount, but also the 100% free shipping. Code M-U-L-T-I.
All right.
Okay, back to the frustrating stuff. We had like 3 hours of discussion before recording this podcast.
Seriously.
Yeah. Trying to figure out, like, you know, what is behind all of this? You know, it's very easy for everyone to just kind of complain and just kind of blame it on rape culture and blame it on toxic masculinity and blame it, spend a lot of our time just blaming men for all these things happening. And Jace, you know, you kind of had some interesting things to share when you were talking about the meetup that you had with a couple of our fans and kind of talking about these things and these feelings that, like, you know, certain men within the poly community may have.
Yeah. Well, this is something that I've felt that I've sort of struggled with for quite a while. And I met up with two of our listeners up in Seattle, which was totally awesome. And we talked about this a little bit too, but it's basically that if you are, you know, if you're a man, especially like the three of us, who is a white male, cis male, mostly hetero guy, you know, you realize that you know, if you're paying any attention, you realize that you are part of the most dangerous group of people for women. That, you know, the huge vast majority of violations of women's consent and violence against women is perpetrated by straight white men.
And let me point out also, not just like violations of consent and sexual assault and things like that, but also on the legislative side.
Well,
historically,
sure.
white cisgender men have been quite dangerous for women and women's rights.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. True. Absolutely. Very true. True. But basically this sort of thing of like, well, on the one hand, like I understand that. And so I understand that a woman would be entirely justified in being afraid of me. And that would probably be a smarter choice for her to be afraid of me than a lot of other people, simply because of the categories that I fall into. But at the same time, that is hard to carry that guilt for something that I haven't done. And it's kind of a tricky thing, and it comes up with, you know, with any time when you're lumped into a category with a bunch of other people, whether it's because of your race or your gender or your religion or, you know, anything else, where it's like, on the one hand, you know, there's a lot of power in being understanding of that and trying to make those things better. But it's also kind of hard dealing with that guilt of feeling like, gosh, everyone hates me. I should kind of hate myself for being part of this, even if you're not, because you still fall into this same category. And I bring this up because it's something that I've found a lot of other guys who identify as feminists or humanists or, you know, who are poly, more forward thinking, kind of can relate to this feeling of struggling with that guilt and kind of maybe shame for being who they are. And it's tricky because I don't want to say that we're the victims here, because that's not the case. Mm-hmm. Like, we are very privileged. But it's important to sort of be aware of the fact that that guilt is there, because if you let that go too far, that's what leads to a lot of these backlash groups, these kind of anti-feminist groups, is this kind of like, I'm so fucking tired of feeling like I'm a bad guy and I'm guilty for stuff I didn't do. So, like, I'm going to need to do something to reclaim my, like, power as a man, and like, oh, I'm actually the victim being a white man because I'm the one getting blamed for everything. You know, whether it's racism or sexism or whatever it is. Right. I can't even talk. You know, racism or sexism or whatever, and kind of being like, oh, well, I'm actually the victim here. And it kind of plays into this whole cultural thing that we're doing at the moment, which is this commodification of suffering. Or placing value on being more of a victim than somebody else. It's something that comes up a lot in our politics. It happens a lot in our in our news coverage, and also in, like, the types of debates that we're having in universities and on, you know, NPR and, like, other you know, both sort of, like, highbrow intellectual places, and also just kind of daily conversation in our TV shows and stuff, is that is kind of this competition of who suffers more, because if you're the one who's, like, more put out and more marginalized, then you're the one who's more right. You have sort of a more of a moral high ground just by default.
Yeah.
So anyway, that was sort of a long, long thing that kind of looped back around on itself, but basically it's kind of about being aware of that little bit of guilt, and feeling a little bit of guilt might not necessarily be a bad thing, but just kind of understanding that it doesn't mean that you have to hate yourself or hate everything that you stand for or anything like that, but to kind of try to find that middle path, that balance of understanding why that's upsetting to other people, seeing how privileged you are, and that people like you have hurt them or have hurt their friends, but not... I guess it's I don't really know a good solution for it, because I've struggled with this for fucking ever.
But, well, my, like, question that's coming
not
up
let
right
that just destroy
is,
you.
Yeah, is like, what is the line between internalizing guilt versus just having, like, an educated awareness about this? You know, because I would point out that, like, I don't think that, you know, carrying, like, white cisgender male guilt is the average inner state of the average white cisgender male.
definitely
it
not.
It probably isn't.
You know, like, I don't think that's the case, but I think that is something that you and several other men, especially in the poly community, have come into because they've gained awareness more so. So I guess that is the question, is, like, where is the difference between awareness and guilt? Because honestly, maybe this sounds like a shitty thing to say. Like, there's some people I can think of where I'm like, well, they could use a little bit of this guilt, maybe.
Sure.
What I actually really mean is maybe they could just use some awareness, and maybe with awareness also comes a little bit of that guilt. I don't know.
Yeah.
Don't
know. Well, and that brings us to, I think, what we really want to get to with this episode is, how do we change this? You know, we're, again, we don't want to buy into this, you know, making a commodity out of suffering and just kind of complaining a lot and being like, oh, the world sucks and we're great, but everyone else is awful. And instead kind of realizing that we're all part of it, that we've all been part of the problem in some way or another, just by being part of our culture at all, and that hopefully we can change it. And so with that, I guess I will start with this idea of kind of understanding your position as a white straight male, that, you know, there's sort of that thing of like, well, what can you do? It's like, oh, well, if you hear another guy, you know, talking a certain way, you should scold him for it, or you should, you know, put him in his place, or, you know, if you hear about a guy mistreating a woman, you should beat him up or whatever, right? Like, there's lots of solutions.
that's a little extreme.
Well, what I'm saying is that actually all of these are not helpful. that also that idea of like putting a guy in his place for something is really not very helpful. Because as we've talked about before, that when you argue with someone about a belief, you're more likely to just make them further entrenched in their belief. And if you try to make someone, you know, put them in their place, which is, again, something that culturally we love, it's in all our movies and shows and stuff, but that's going to lead to that feeling of guilt, which is going to make them want to lash back with some sort of anti-feminism. And so what I wanted to suggest, specifically to men, and I really think that anyone could do this, but it's that rather than resorting to that place of anger or wanting to give someone their comeuppance, as it were, is to instead ask the questions that that person kind of can't really answer unless they've thought about it. Like for example, Emily, you were mentioning earlier that a coworker at one of your jobs said something, accused you of being a bitch, asked you if you were on your period because you were being a bitch. Because you told him an order was wrong. Something that's totally reasonable and for you to do, you know. You are his supervisor. And
exactly.
In that situation, as another, either as yourself or another person, is to rather than react to that place of like, dude, what the fuck? Not cool. I mean, maybe you could react with that first if you just want to be clear that, like, that's really inappropriate. But, is to kind of ask, like, you know, hey, what? Like, any time that you're in a bad mood or tell someone they do something wrong, is that because your hormones are out of whack? Or is like, oh, is that because, like, your dad didn't love you? Or, you know, something that's just kind of absurd. No, I mean, just to kind of point out, like, hey, like, that's kind of a ridiculous thing that you just asked. Then to hopefully from there have at least a little bit of a conversation. Like I found that it's you're not going to convince them right then. So your job is not to like argue with them and convince them, but it's just to kind of at least open up the possibility that there are other ways to think about it.
Yeah. I really appreciate and like the fact that you talked about having a conversation with someone. I have a very good friend who's a teacher to middle school students in South Central Los Angeles. And she said that she's like a huge feminist, really like big within the feminist community in LA. And one of her male students came in and was wearing like a t-shirt with two very scantily clad women on it in kind of degrading positions, essentially. Just like very, like, suggestive positions. And she said to the kid, like, why do you think that that's okay? And then explained to him why it's not okay to, like, wear something like that. She said, you know, you're reducing all the women in here, and especially all the young women, to that photo, and saying that they essentially are, you know, only worthy if they look like that. And that's, you know, continuing the idea of rape culture or whatever within the community. And it's not an okay thing to do. And, the, you know, the kid was able to, like, have an, or at least, like, have a context for what she was speaking about. And then, you know, maybe change his thinking. I think we, you talked about it before, Jace, like, we don't teach our kids as they're growing up, like what they need to be thinking about and how they need to be speaking to women. And if you can do that from a young age, and if you can do it at any age, like, hey, let's have a conversation about why this is not okay. I think that that can potentially like help move something forward.
I've also found that in terms of my conversation with other men, when I'm kind of thinking back of like what, When something like that has come up, like even in conversation where it's mostly men there and someone says something that's got a little bit of that kind of sexist charge to it or like entitled or, you know, something, that when I think back of what's kind of had the most seemingly positive effect, a lot of times it's kind of starting with that question or kind of bringing something up. And a lot of times they will have a response to it. It's not like they're like, wow, I never thought of it. But, like, they'll give you some just kind of off-the-cuff response. And is even just expressing something as simple as, like, oh, you know, like, I really don't think that's the case. Like, that really doesn't seem right to me. I actually think it's, you know, that whatever, that, like, women should have just as much right to choose who they're sleeping with as you do, or like, wouldn't you want to be able to choose that if it were you, or, you know, kind of whatever it is of just saying, oh, you know, I disagree with that. Not like you have to agree with me, but just kind of expressing like, hey, you know, I actually think this other way. And a lot of times it gets left at that, but I have found that over time, a lot of times you'll see a little bit of change there. Because it's just, again, it's kind of that humanizing. It's offering another view without making them dig in their heels and stick to where they are. And unfortunately, that's not happening with Donald Trump, because it's he's either too far gone or something.
There's definitely too far gone.
Can you imagine what a come to Jesus moment that could be, though?
Wow. Yeah. If
I'm assuming, I wonder if anyone out there is... Yeah, he has been like, what in the, for the love of God, what are you doing? Like,
I know that we're running long, but this discussion is reminding me of just one thing. I watched a video once of a black woman being interviewed about the concept of white privilege. And I know this is, you know, this is bringing in like more race issues, but this is still relevant when talking about specifically, like, you know, about like white privilege and male privilege and things like that. And she told a story about how, like, she went to the grocery store with her half sister, and her half sister looks more white. Okay. And that her half sister was in line ahead of her. She bought her groceries. She used a check. The checker was very warm, very friendly. And then she went and waited to the side. And that when she stepped up and paid for her groceries, used a check, that the checker then was like, well, I need to see two forms of ID. She took her check. She pulled out like the bad checkbook and was checking it, you know, and that the black woman inside her was saying, like, if I say something right now, like, I'm going to be another angry black woman. You know, if I say something, it's just going to be people are scared of the black lady who's throwing a fit. You know, it's not going to go well. So I'm just going to deal with it and not say anything. But her half sister stepped in. And she was the one who pointed out, like, hey, like, why are you doing this? This is weird. This is my sister. You know, like, this is really weird that you're doing this. And that, you know, got the manager to come over, that got people in line talking about it. And so she pointed out the fact that, like, my sister used her white privilege as a way to actually highlight this for other people, because she was aware of the fact that she walks in a world that's different from mine. And so in that instance, white privilege was actually a great thing. And so I think it's something kind of similar, where it's like, if you're aware of this, if you are aware of your own privilege, and part of being privileged is also being able to not have to be aware of your own privilege. But when you do wake up to that,
but when you're able,
it is
to
something
be aware
that
of
you can use. Exactly. You know, that you can be the guy who says something rather than the woman who reacts and is a bitch, you know, or the woman who reacts and says something and gets her job taken away or loses an opportunity. So that's just what it reminded me of.
If I could take one moment at the end here as well, I know we are running long, but to get on my soapbox about something that comes up a lot in conversations, and I wish people were a little more aware of, and I've been guilty of this before as well. But this is the idea that you personally, as a human, can speak from your own experience, which is based on the groups that you fall into, like your religion, your race, your economic status, your sexuality, right? All those things. But that you personally cannot speak on behalf of that entire group, of any one of those entire groups. And this is something that, like, in the, you know, kind of early integrating of schools in the U.S. would be a problem. If there was, say, you had a class where there was one African-American student, and the teacher might call on them and say, could you give us a black perspective on this? And, you know, that it's, we are put into that, or the same thing on, you know, it could be a panel and it's like, oh, well, let's, like, what's like a straight perspective on this? Or like, do you have a, like, what's the queer perspective? Or that a lot of people, especially in minorities, will kind of take it upon themselves to feel like they can talk on behalf of their whole thing. It's like, oh, well, you know, as a bisexual man, like, this is what we think. This is our experience. And I just think that doing that, whether it's as a woman or a man or as a sexual minority, actually kind of undermines everything, because it's furthering this idea that you and everyone like you is the same. That you're not, that you're not individuals, you know? It's why things like men are from Mars, women are from Venus is so toxic an idea, because it is reducing us all down to being the same, because we're just in this category. And I think that it's something that even those of us who do tend to be the people who try to educate ourselves more and to educate other people, we can really easily fall into this trap of trying to speak on behalf of a group that's larger than us, and as a result, unintentionally belittling that group and dehumanizing the people in it and turning them into a group instead of individuals. So that's my little soapbox.
Yeah, we've soapboxed a lot today. Yes, thank you guys for listening to all of it.
Yes, thank you so much.
Get out and vote.
Yes,
please.
God. Get out and vote. Also, we would love to have you as part of our community. I promise it's not always such a stressful topic as politics and all of this. We do have some really fun, happy times as well. But really, we love all of you, and we really appreciate you. Thank you for listening. And please go out there and make the world a better place and treat everyone better than you wish you were treated.
And in the meantime, you guys can find us at our website, multiamory.com. You can send us a question, a comment, a shout out, to anything you want, to info@multiamory.com. And you can follow us at Twitter @multiamory. We'll see you next week, guys.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
Farewell.
Waiting on a tax return? Hopefully it ends up in your hands. Fraudulent tax returns due to identity theft increased by 30% in 2023. If you're in a bind this tax season, LifeLock can help. Our U.S.-based restoration specialists are experts dedicated to helping solve your identity theft issues. And all LifeLock plans are backed by the $1 Million Protection Package. So we'll reimburse you up to the limits of your plan if you lose money due to identity theft. Help protect your information this tax season with LifeLock. Save up to 25% your first year at LifeLock.com/aware.